It's now time for Sports Saturday.
Are you serious, really?
On 101.3, The Game.
I know football.
Sports Saturday is powered in part by Green City Garage, an environmentally responsible garage in South Burlington, working on all makes and models and specializing in your family's car, truck, or SUV. Vermont Engine Service, an engine and machine shop, 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. Vermont Mortgage Company, mortgage expertise dedicated to Vermonters. See how easy obtaining a mortgage can be. And Romanto's Pizza, delivering to a 10-mile radius of their Taft Corners, Williston location. This is Sports Saturday.
Yet another missed tackle.
Living the dream and taking you with us. 101.3, The Game.
Oh boy. Yeah, this is Sports Saturday. I'm your host. God, that sounds weird. I'm your host, Austin Danforth. Jeff Paul, your usual pilot, is out on break. To my right, I got my co-pilot from the BFP, Alex Abrami. And on the board, we have Aaron Wells, as usual. And I'm not sure, I'm the first time flying the plane here. I'm not sure they usually let the pilots fly when they're severely jet lagged. Anybody know anything about that?
I don't know anything about that, okay. But I think
these days they have autopilot.
I mean, I was just telling the guys, I'm normally a night owl. I usually am up at least 1, 2 a.m. I fell asleep at 10:30 p.m. last night. That's unheard of for me. Unheard of.
And this is what, 48 hours after you came back?
Yeah. I don't believe in jet lag. I don't think it's a real thing. I mean, I know it's a thing, but I think it's in your head. So I try not to let it get in my head. But damn, if I didn't hit the wall at like 9 p.m. last night. And the night before, I mean, Thursday, you saw me. I felt like I was in and out of being a zombie all day Thursday. And I went to Scotland for 10 days last week with my dad and a family friend. We played some golf. It wasn't a golf trip. It was a trip with golf. By no means the longest trip I've ever had to do. By no means the longest travel I've ever had to do. I've been to New Zealand a few times. That's way different ballpark. But this one's kicking my butt, and I don't know why.
So whatever. 6 hours across the pond, and then you lose those hours. So,
yeah.
So your body, your mind is kind of all out of whack at that point.
Yeah, and my general trick is to like get on, just don't think about it, just power through. Caffeine's your friend. Get on your normal schedule as quick as possible and then go from there. I'm hoping that happened yesterday, but I don't know.
You looked refreshed.
Do I?
Yeah.
I mean, I got 9 hours of sleep, so that's more like normal.
You looked refreshed.
Okay, good. Good.
Was it Thursday morning? You got up at 6 a.m., right?
Thursday morning.
That never happens.
Right, but it was between 6 and 7 a.m., but that's, we're talking noon Scotland time. And there was a couple days in Scotland. I was up before 5 a.m. just because I was excited. And I mean, but like going around playing, courses in the home of golf, where the game I play all the time was born. It was a trip. It was great. I think maybe now the jet lag is an effect of like the losing the adrenaline. Maybe
that could be it.
I don't know, but I wouldn't do anything differently. I know that.
So you told me you golfed, you had 6.5 rounds of golf over the 10 days.
Yeah.
Everything you thought of with those courses? You, I know you did a lot of research ahead of time.
Yeah, I spent like the better part of like 6-7 months like researching, brainstorming, daydreaming, all those things.
So if there was someone to go on a trip on, you're the guy to go with.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'd like to think so. I'm enthusiastic.
So did it meet your expectations?
It exceeded them. Yeah. The weather, I mean, you flip a coin, you hope you have good luck. And we saw rain, like, I'm going to say like 5% of the trip. So right there, all of a sudden we're out ahead. Then you get out on the golf course. And I was telling my roommate earlier, you can, like, when you go play golf at a new place, like you're somewhere between being overexcited and like a little jumpy. And that wasn't the case. I felt right at home. It was crazy. A couple rounds in, I was talking to my dad, we're walking down a fairway, and I'm like, is my game thriving right now? Everything suited my eye. There weren't trees to find with the driver off the tee. It was great. It was roomy. Could, you know, put your elbows out a little bit. Got to be creative. The scenery spectacular. We didn't play golf that wasn't on the ocean. Like, just think about that. Like, every round of golf we played on the ocean.
That's worth it right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't happen in America. You want to do that, you go to Pebble Beach, you pay $500. The last day of the trip, we played a place called The Glen, which is around the corner from a place called North Berwick, which is a world-famous course. And it doesn't, you know, it's not losing any ground to North Berwick, but The Glen is basically, they have a stretch that's like the 13th, 14th hole, little baby par 3 downhill. Looks just like the 7th at Pebble Beach. World-famous golf hole. Little baby hole, into the wind, tiny green, and then the next hole, uphill, blind tee shot. Just like Pebble Beach. 7-8 at Pebble, 13-14 at The Glen. It's like, this round golf costs $60. It was like 1/10 of what a round at Pebble would cost. And we're just sitting out there, sun's shining. It's amazing. I couldn't have had a better time on this trip. And that half round out golf you mentioned,
yep.
Sneaky half round. We were trying to play this little 9-hole course on the way to the Isle of Skye, budgeted for a couple hours, got there. We had an hour and 15 minutes to play golf and then catch the ferry. So we played like 4.5 holes. I'm sprinting back to the car carrying my dad's golf bag and my golf bag just so we like are ready enough to like fly up, speed up the coast, get to the ferry. We get to the ferry on time, 2 minutes early before they said we need to be there. They don't let us on. They let two other cars on before us. It's like, what's going on here? So anyway, long story short, they get us on the next ferry, but it was okay. But it was tense, like, because if we didn't catch that ferry, the one after it was booked, and if we didn't catch the ferry at all, we're talking a 4-hour drive back around two different peninsulas to get to where we needed to go that night. And it was tense in the car there for a bit, but we survived.
Yeah, but now you have, that's one of those stories you're going to have with you for the rest
of
your life.
Yeah, I believe they call that second degree fun, where it's not really that fun in the moment, but after the fact, it's funny. So, hey, you know, we're good.
I've heard that story twice now, and it's just as good the first as the second time.
Oh, good. I'm glad I'm not boring you.
Yeah.
You're listening to Sports Saturday. We're 10 minutes in here. It's on Sports Saturday on 101.3 ESPN. And yeah.
So close.
Oh, damn. I'm looking up at the VIX. 101.3 The Game. Reflex. A lot of 101.3 The Game. You got any questions, comments, concerns? You can call 802-655-6672. Sports Saturday. No Jeff Paul this week. He's down enjoying the sun in Florida, I believe. Driving around a Mustang, I think I saw on Facebook. So yeah, it's Austin Danforth and Alex Abrami here with Aaron Wells on the board. And I'm just regaling everybody in the little bit tidbits of Scotland. Maybe the weirdest, coolest, most interesting thing though, like, so we tried to get on the old course. Everybody in the world wants to play the old course. It's, you know, the home of golf. First 18-hole course in the history of the world. Everybody's played it. All the best players in the world have played it. The British Open is there every 5 years. They're closed on Sundays.
Yeah, you told me that, and I was stunned.
Yeah.
You play golf on Sundays.
Yeah, country, everybody right? plays golf on Sundays everywhere. Like, it's just like they are not open on Sundays. I mean, and you think about it, they get all these rounds, so the course does need a break. But a weird quirk of, like, Scottish tradition, the old course in St. Andrews is in the middle of the town. So on Sundays, it becomes a park. Everybody can just walk around. So we didn't get to play it that day, but we walked around, you know, walked up the 18th, the first, the road hole, the second hole, you know, and the road hole, you look at from the tee box and you hit it over a hotel, like to find the fairway. It's a blind tee shot over a building to the old course hotel to the fairway to maybe the toughest green complex on the course. And it's tight. There's like maybe 15 feet between the road hole bunker, which is a nightmare to get out of, and the edge of the green. And then you slope down into a pathway and a stone wall. I couldn't imagine playing it in the British Open when it's 460 yards into the wind. But then again, I'm not a pro golfer. So, yeah, it's cool. And the other weird thing, like, it's not just the old course, the tradition of golf in Scotland. You get these, like, the courses popped up inside towns, but basically between the town and the coast on this, what's called Lynx land. It was land nobody wanted. It linked the town to the beach and the water. So there's this longstanding tradition of, like, people can just walk their dogs and, like, walk around the golf course. They know not to get in the way, but, like, you're teeing off or you're, you know, hitting out of a bunker, and then behind the bunker walks this couple holding hands and they're walking their two golden retrievers or whatever. You're like, wait, I don't want to scull it and hurt you right now, but okay, I got to hit this shot. Like, there's people behind us ready to play.
Can you imagine that happening at the Masters around Indian Corner?
No, I couldn't. God, they don't let people in Augusta National for a reason. Yeah. But it's at the same time, it's kind of charming and like, okay. And it's a cool relationship that the golf can have with the town and the people around it. So I couldn't recommend it any more highly. I'm so jacked up on golf right now. Granted, I haven't been awake enough to watch a ton of the PGA, but you know, we're looking at that on TV. Brooks Koepka is the Terminator. Holy cow.
He just kicks butt during majors.
It's, and you know, we watched it, you know, 20 years ago, 15 years ago, Tiger Woods, where like he would tee it up and he was basically going to be a top 10, top five. About 50% of the time he was going to win. And you know, when you win four majors in a row, that's never happened before in the modern age. He did that. Brooks Koepka is like a different player in the majors versus the regular tour events. Regular tour events, he's just another guy. You get him in the majors, holy, like it's unreal. And I don't know how he does it. I don't, like, no one's ever done it like this before, where he just gets out there and he makes the toughest events look like the easy ones.
And it's got to be his mental approach too. We were listening to one of our favorite podcasts and he was on this past week and he was like, if it's going to be a great shot or it's going to be a bad shot, that's just roll with it.
Yeah.
And he's rolling with it, you know, through 2+ days right now. So.
And that's easier said than done. I mean, it's easier said when you hit great shots most of the time. But like, so he shot 63 on Thursday.
Yep.
And then 65 yesterday. He said after the round yesterday, he didn't hit it great. He wasn't playing very well. He didn't like how he played that great. But like he scored... he put up a great number, and now he's got the 36-hole scoring record at a major championship. Whoa.
Do you know the story behind how he went full-time with golf?
Loosely.
So he, when he was like 9 or 10, got into a car accident, smashed up his face. I think his nanny was driving, and smashed up his face, broke his nose. And so he couldn't play physical sports for like whatever it was, a year or something like that. So he stopped playing hockey. And he just focused on baseball and golf, and then he soon realized he's pretty good at golf, so he decided to pursue that more.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, that was kind of like the change of fate there for him, where he's a hockey player kind of playing golf on the side, and then an injury forces him, or car accident forces him to, you know, change things up.
Yeah, and not only that, like, he toiled in the Euro Challenge Tour, found his game while he was, you know, in one of the, like, that's not easy to do. Like, you're not playing for a lot of money. You're not playing in all the nice places. You're not catered to. You got to go out and play your golf every week and grind to get, you know, the standing, to get, you know, to elevate your career even further. And he did that. Like, there aren't a lot of guys that have gone that route and, you know, made it as big as him. Maybe none. But, you know, and Tiger was throwing a ton of respect. They played together the first 2 days. Yeah. Tiger praising the hell out of him. Like that's like what he's done to get where he is and now play like he does is remarkable.
So he's won 3 out of the last 5 majors or something like that? Or is it 6? 3 out of 6?
I want to say 3 out of 6 sounds right, because he's got the last 2 PGAs and the U.S. Open in the, so I think 3 out of 6. And he's cruising towards a 4th. He tees off at 250 today. And then a couple... pretty big names right behind him. If he falters, you got the Adam Scott at 5 under and Jordan Spieth at 5 under. Spieth starting to look like the Spieth we recognized 2-3 years ago. And I'm a Spieth guy. I like watching him play. I like watching him roll the rock. When he's putting, that's electric. When he's looking at 35 footers like they're 5 footers, I'm excited. I think the game's better when he's in it, because he's good enough. He's just sharp. He's different, and that putter, when he gets it rolling, is an equalizer. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Austin Danforth here, flying the plane, a little jet lag, trying to get over it. Coming up today, we got the next segment. We're going to talk some local sports. Alex and I, he's going to get me up to speed on what I missed in 10 days in Scotland. After that, at 10:40, we've got an old friend of ours, Lauren Reed, former Free Press sports writer, biggest Bruins fan I know. She's going to be on at 10:40 to, I'm hoping she's going to gloat a little bit, because I mean, sweeping the Eastern Conference Final is no joke. And now they get to sit back and see who they're going to play, either the Blues or the Sharks. That's tied up 2-2 out West after the Blues' victory last night. See what Lauren's take is, who she's more afraid of, if she's afraid at all. I'm sure, you know, that's going to change once the Bruins maybe lose a game in the cup final, if they do, but that's TBD. And then, we got, at 11:05-ish, UVM men's basketball coach John Becker is going to call in. We're going to talk to John, get up to speed on where the Cats are, what the offseason's looking like, what he's thinking going into next season. Picked up a couple transfers from power conferences here in the last couple weeks. Alex has written about those on the Free Press website. And then later in the hour, we've got the second hour, that is, 11:40 or so, we're going to talk to UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman. They've got a big announcement up at Gutterson Fieldhouse today. We're pretty sure it's arena related, maybe getting an inching closer here to getting some shovels in the ground and start putting some, laying some concrete, digging some concrete, laying some concrete, doing all those good things, getting us closer to a new place to watch Catamount Sports. So, yeah. How's my flying right now, boys?
I think you're doing well. It's always hard the first time.
Well, and improving maybe? What can I do better? Just team me up here, caddy me. You're my caddy today.
What can you do better? I think it's really just the confidence. I think as you get used to it, it's going to be easier.
Yeah. Okay. I'm trying to fly with some confidence here. Minus the 101.3 ESPN mix app. This is not 101.3 ESPN anymore, folks. 101.3 The Game. We'll be here for the next 2 hours. You can dial in, or text the Town Fair Tire text line at 802-655-6672. And we're out. Not yet.
real quick.
What do you got? Oh, we got the poll question.
Yeah.
How about that?
We got the Twitter poll question sponsored by Green City Garage, located at 49B Commerce Ave in South Burlington. So I got my car worked on at Green City Garage. He gave me a little discount.
Ooh.
He waived a couple of things that I needed to get done so that I had another year to deal with it, because
mm-hmm.
I had an inspection coming up.
Yep.
So that was huge. I have a car to go on my vacation next week now.
Beautiful.
Which is just perfect. Chris is a great guy. He'll always take care of you. The Twitter poll question, who would you rather see the Bruins face, the Sharks or the Blues?
I want the Blues just for the sport. Like, because, I mean, the Blues, they've never won, right? Or did they win early? I think they won early. It's been like 50-some years for them.
They never won with like Brett Hall.
Yeah.
Back in those.
You talk about a franchise and a city that, you know, they just had to watch their former football team go to the Super Bowl. That's going to be, yeah, that I'm, that would be fun. Blues Bruins. That's what I'm rooting for. That's my pick. But yeah, this is Sports Saturday. We'll be back talking some local sports, high school and college here, coming back after the break.
And now, getting you ready for game day. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
All right. It's still Sports Saturday. What coming into the second segment here on 101.3 The Game. Austin Danforth and Alex Abrami, the BFP Sports Department, has taken over the airwaves for this morning in Chittenden County. And Alex, I've been out of town. You've been in the trenches taking grenades this last week and a half.
I was just going to say that. As you're in Scotland, I was just taking it all.
I was trying to avoid the pot bunkers and actually did pretty well. Didn't get stuck in one. Actually, that's a lie. Second to last round, I did get stuck in one, but it was a brutal lie. Couldn't get out of it. But otherwise, I was batting 1,000. Alex, before we get into what I missed, we do have the Vermont City Marathon coming up next weekend.
Yeah, the 31st edition, if you can believe
and
it.
And about as early as they can run it, too, right? I mean, early Memorial Day weekend this year.
Right, yeah, May 26th. Yeah, because sometimes it's like the last Sunday in May. It all depends on how the calendar falls.
Right.
So that's coming up on May 26th. We've had a few stories in the lead up to that. We'll have a couple more this week.
And we'll have blanket coverage on the day, results, photos, videos.
Yeah, the whole
words,
nine yards.
Everything you've come to expect of the Free Press coverage of the biggest sporting event in Vermont each year.
Really? It is. Yeah. It's close to, when you count relay runners and the marathoners together, it's like 7,800 runners on the day. And then depending on, like, I've heard over the years of close to 20,000 people or so lining the streets and rooting people on.
It's a city of 45,000 people. So that adds up.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's where where Run Vermont, who organizes the marathon, has since it started, kind of says it's the biggest sporting event in Vermont because of all the people who are here in one place and all the runners and everything.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty big event. Takes over Burlington for all of Sunday.
And one of the stories we've had already that actually launched, I think, the day I got back from Scotland, you had a great piece on a CVU baseball player who's going to run the marathon in the memory of a former teammate and friend.
Tyler Skaffenstedt, senior baseball player for CVU. He decided at the end of last year. So at CVU, they all have this grad challenge that they do. And I'm sure other schools have similar type of projects. But at CVU, it seems somewhat a little more well-known because they call it grad challenge. And I've seen... We've had kids over the years reach out to us to help with their projects. So for Tyler, he decided then of his junior year, he wanted to run the marathon and chronicle that. His dad's a marathoner. His dad's done dozens of marathons, apparently, or at least 20 or so. He's watched his dad do the marathon here in Vermont. And so he decided he was going to do that. And then start his senior year, his longtime friend, Paul Hoppner, committed suicide October 8th. And I think, shortly after that, I think he wanted to incorporate teen suicide awareness into his project. And, I think it's a way for him to cope with his friend's loss. But it's also a way to spread Paul's message, spread the message that, it's okay to not be okay. And I think he's handled it pretty well. I mean, the training is the training. He's going to go out and, he's 18 years old. If he runs a conservative race, he'll be fine. He'll finish. I think he's aiming for like 4:15, 4.5 hours. So that's
absolutely respectable there.
Yeah. But I think the big takeaway is, and this also includes his teammates on the baseball team, that they've done a really good job of spreading that message of it's okay not to be okay. I think it's important in this day and age where we've seen the rise in teen suicides.
Yeah.
That it's you want to reach out, you want to talk to someone. You want to see, you chime in whenever you want, but yeah. I think it's an issue that schools are faced with more so than any other time. And I think someone like Tyler doing this it's an important thing to do. And for someone at his age to be that mature about it, I think that's great.
Yeah. And you want to talk about a team that's had to take some punches. The CVU Redhawks baseball team over the years, they've had parents that have been affected by cancer. Recently, they've had players affected by cancer. One of their pitchers this year, one of their two lead starting pitchers, Storm Rushford, incredible, incredible kid, battled leukemia last year still. I mean, he's not out of the woods, but he's gotten himself so he's able to play and be incredibly effective for the 12-0 Redhawks. Baseball is tough to be undefeated, and here the Redhawks are 12-0. The lefty starter for the Redhawks the other day, Ian Parent, just threw a no-no, but Storms hasn't been far behind there. Remarkable from that kid. He's just a junior. I mean, I wrote about him last year when he first got back on the diamond there after a pretty scary 8-9 months of battling leukemia. And to throw this in the mix, their coach Tim Albertson is a first class dude, and really runs a good outfit there. They're doing it the right way. They respect the game. They respect the people around the game. Good kids on and off the diamond, and right now they're reaping the rewards of playing well on the diamond.
They're 11-0 now. I think
12-0.
They
12-0.
12-0, and they must play today.
They do play today, and then everybody's got to finish up next week.
And 12-0 and against the rest of the state's best.
Yeah.
They've beaten St. Jay. They've beaten Essex. They've beaten Rice. The no-hitter was from Ian Parent was against Rice. I think that was 6-0 on Wednesday.
Yeah, you want to look at who CVU's beaten. St. Jay, Burlington, BFA, Colchester, Burren Burton, Mount Mansfield, Rice, North Country, South Burlington, Essex, Rice again, and Essex again. And you look at that, they haven't let up more than 4 runs in a game. I mean, and that was a game that they scored 17 of their own, so those four were sort of moot. But it feels like every year Tim Albertson's team is in the mix, and they're leading the mix currently. Once again, and that's an impressive resume they've built. Behind them in the standings and in D1, you've got Burn Burton at 9-2, South Burlington at 9-3. SB are the defending champs. They played, I want to say, 9 games before a lot of teams had played 2 this spring, just the way it had worked out for them. After SB, you've got Essex at 7-4, Colchester 7-4, St. Jay 7-4, Bratt 9-4, and Rice at 7-4. There's a lot of good baseball teams right now, Alex.
We could have this conversation every year.
But it seems like they're as tight as ever. Were there any results that stuck out at you while I was gone, maybe aside from that no-no that Ian Parent threw for the Redhawks?
For baseball? I think Burlington beating St. Johnsbury on the middle of this week.
Yeah.
It was a 6-4 game. Burlington scored. They played at 4 in the first inning. Burlington, of course, has one of the best players in the state,
Donovan Montgomery. Yep.
Refresh my memory. Where is he going? He's going D1.
Infielder headed for Siena.
That's right. I think that result, because Burlington is, I think that was only their second win of the year. And they have been one of the better ball clubs the last three years.
Somewhere in there.
So like they're on the bottom end of the standings, but I think that could be a confidence shot for them. As we get closer to the end of the regular season.
Yeah. You're listening to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. If you got anything to add here on some local sports, we're talking local sports for the next 5-10 minutes here. 802-655-6672. You can also text that number. It's the Town Fair Tire text line. Alex, so we've set the table a little bit here in baseball. What's going on in softball? Where are we standing there?
You could start with Essex Hornets.
When's the last time they lost?
2 seasons ago, I think, in the final. So they had a perfect season last year, beat Mount Anthony. I think Essex and Mount Anthony met like 4 straight years in the final or something like that, and they split. And then so Essex won the one last year, and to cap a 20-0 season, they're 10-0 right now. 10-0 by a whisker, too, because they they had to rally at CVU to win on, I think that must have been Thursday, 6-3.
Yeah, they had to score 5 in the last 2.
And we were looking it up in the office, I think, on Thursday afternoon before that game. Like, CVU hasn't had a winning season since what, 04? 05?
They got to 500 a couple years ago.
Yeah.
But they haven't had a winning season.
A winning season.
Yeah.
That's a non-winning season, non-losing season, 8-8. So CVU hasn't really been a team of note for over a decade.
Right.
And Essex has been, you could argue, the best program over the last decade with Mount Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
So for CVU now to be one of the contenders, that kind of opens your eyes. Okay, now we got a few more teams you could throw in the mix with Missisquoi and South Burlington, Mount Abraham, and they're in D2. But, you know, Mount Anthony still, Brattleboro down south.
You look at the top of D1 softball here, Essex 10-0. Linden 11-0, but they've haven't played quite the same caliber of teams. Granted, they're scoring like 20 runs a game, so who knows? You got Missisquoi 11-1. Who was their loss to?
Mount Abraham on Wednesday or Thursday.
Okay, yep.
A 2-1 game.
Wow. That's remarkable, because Missisquoi has firepower like crazy with the Harvey sisters and Alexandra Bruyette.
It sounds like after Jay Hartman called in the game, he's the Missisquoi longtime coach, that Mount Abraham ace, Ruby Ball, pitched very well. I think she had 9 or 10 strikeouts. And the defense behind her played really well. And then the Thunderbirds left 12 on base. So that's going to hurt any offense when you're not knocking in runners in scoring position.
That's a lot of ducks on the pond.
Yeah.
And if you look at them, you got Mount Anthony, BFA St. Albans, 9-3. BFA is always in it. South Burlington is a dangerous squad at 9-3. And then Brattleboro 10-3, and you're looking at CVU right there at 8-4. So a lot of parity after the top 2 or 3 undefeated squads. And what are we looking at? What's noteworthy in lacrosse before we get out of this segment, Alex?
In boys lacrosse, BFA is undefeated. Runner-up last year to CVU. They play at CVU this morning. I think the game is going on right now.
Oh, hello.
If our schedule's correct, they were supposed to start at 10. And okay. And so BFA undefeated. CVU, the one loss was a very surprising 7-6 defeat to South Burlington on I think last Thursday or Friday. I mean South Burlington's always one of the best teams in the state, but they came into that game 3-6.
Our friend Amir just wanted to let us know that CVU girls tennis lost for the first time in 75 matches.
Yes, that was, you can read about that on the Burlington Free Press website recently. Posted something about that yesterday. CVU has been in the last 10 Division I state championships. They've won the last four. They've played South Burlington in the last six championship matches.
It's pretty much those two.
Yeah.
Every year.
And the Redhawks beat the Wolves twice earlier this year, but the Wolves became the first team since the 2014 season to beat CVU. They did it with a match that featured six tiebreaker sets on Thursday. So that's about as good as high school tennis is going to get in Vermont right there. As far as, you know, being competitive and you know, white knuckle stuff. That's pretty remarkable streak by the Redhawks and a great effort by South Burlington to put it together on the day.
Right. I mean, we've seen streaks like that in other sports. CVU girls basketball, for instance. CVU boys lacrosse, for instance. But to see the see them do that in tennis, where you can win four straight titles, that's amazing. But to not lose a game or lose a match over the course of the regular season for four plus straight years, that's an impressive milestone.
And talk about milestones. Couple while I was gone, CVU boys lacrosse coach Dave Trevithick.
Yeah, I got to win number 200. He's 242-1 in his 13-plus seasons.
Wow.
That's a 84% winning percentage.
Wow. You talk about coaches with ungodly winning percentages. CVU's got a few of them.
Yeah, he's probably not even at the top of the list.
No, I mean, I think it's still Uta Otley and Stan Williams duking it out up there at the top. But so great accomplishment there for Coach Trevithick. And then BFA Fairfax baseball coach Mike Brown notched number 300 with the Bullets there.
Yeah, we need to, we talked about this earlier in the week. We need to find come up with a list of 300 wins for coaches in the state. We know the big heavy hitters, obviously, but we want to compile a list of everyone. So
all right,
that's a project for the summer.
And when we come back here, we're going to talk to our old friend Lauren Reed. Check in with the Bruins fandom. See how they're feeling heading into the Stanley Cup final.
Sports Saturday is back on 101.3 The Game.
I love our boy Aaron Wells' bumper music. It's perfect. I love it. Can't get enough of it. You're not supposed to look forward to the breaks, but a break means you get music coming in and coming out. So everybody wins. It's Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Been talking a little golf, a little Scotland, some local sports. And now, Alex, we get to talk to a former teammate of ours who I got to think is just grinning ear to ear over the way the Bruins put together a impressive, impressive Eastern Conference sweep in the final. And they're waiting to see who they play in the Stanley Cup final next week or the week after. Lauren Reed, how's it going?
Good. How are you? Welcome back.
Thanks. I go away. Does this mean I need to go away for the Stanley Cup final too to ensure another sweep for you?
I mean, I wouldn't say no. I mean, it's routine, man. I'm a little superstitious. So maybe you should head back to Scotland.
If you book it, I'll go. But then you're going to have to deal with an angry Alex Abrami here if I'm leaving him high and dry again.
If you book it, I think I'd send myself, to be fair. But
I feel like I'd get more out of the golf, but that's just me.
I mean, but I might get more out of the whiskey, seeing how you don't like it.
I warmed up to it. I could drop some names here. I had some Oban. I had some Talisker. I had some Bruichladdich. I had some White and McKay. What else did I have? Oh, I had some famous grouse on the course because that's my dad's go-to in the flask. Drinking responsibly, of course. I dabbled. I did what I could.
Any Lagavulin?
No Lagavulin. Had a couple other islas, though. Had some Springbank that was a little rugged. That's from Campbelltown. I'm dropping some all the Scotch heads out there. They should be perking up right now.
I'm very proud of you for branching out from the usual Bud Light PBR life.
So. Oh, I mix it up. You know that about me.
Austin doesn't like Bud Light.
PBR, right?
Yeah, PBR is my go-to cheap beer.
That's my go-to.
Alex Abrami's a Bud Light guy.
I'm confusing the Free Press drinking plan.
That's okay. What's not confusing though is how your Bruins dismantled the Hurricanes. Holy cow!
It was to the point where I wasn't even nervous watching Game 4. Like, I just, like, you've seen me when it's a tense game. I was just kind of leisurely watching. Like, I just had no doubt in Game 4 that they were going to close that out.
Where did this performance come from? Because, I mean, seven games against the Leafs, six against the Blue Jackets, and they were down 2-1 in that series. Now they've won seven straight playoff games, and the Hurricanes looked like arguably maybe the best team, the best team in the playoffs, at least the Eastern Conference.
Oh, I think a little bit is the Carolina's inexperience. I think they only had like one or two guys that really had any playoff experience, and I think once they got behind. And it looked like they weren't even going to be able to beat Tuukka Rask at all. It kind of took the wind out of their sails a little bit. You could kind of see it in their body language. Every time Tuukka made a big save, they just kind of like throw it in their hands and like, I don't know what to do kind of thing. I think that didn't help. I think on the opposite side, the Bruins have a lot of experience. And now that they can see that final Stanley Cup in the mirror, I think they're finally like, okay, let's just do this. Let's put the pedal to the metal and go. And I think they kind of just, that experience just took over for them. I mean, you could see it with both Bergeron and Marchand in Game 4. They were just going like crazy because they knew they could close it out. Chara was a beast for the first three games. And then when he got out in Game 4, kind of out of nowhere, the rest of the defense just stepped up. It was, they're firing on all cylinders right now, which is pretty fun to see.
In Game 4, I think there was a stretch where Carolina didn't take a shot for like 14 minutes, something crazy like that. But aside, it sounded like their will was just broken at that point. But
yeah. And I think you could tell that. And I think the Bruins figured out how to slow down their offense because they weren't letting Carolina's D. Carolina works best on offense when their D is activated and pushing up the ice, and they just couldn't get that traction against the Bruins. And then when they got in the offensive zone, the Bruins just wouldn't let them get to the net. Everything that they were allowing them was from outside. And if Tuukka Rask can see the puck, he's going to stop the puck. It's the way he's going right now.
Is that it too, though? When Tuukka is as hot as he is, is that the old cliche? You know, when you get to the playoffs, you ride the hot goalie and get the cup.
Yeah, I think it's a bit. I mean, you need a goalie to get hot for at least part of the playoffs in order to go far. And he's playing as good as I've seen him play in my years watching. He looks so dialed in. Like, he looks like nothing is going to get by him unless he decides to give up a softie. Like, it's actually pretty crazy to watch how well he's been playing right now.
And Tuukka aside, who was the player, the Eastern Conference final for the Bruins for you?
I think Charlie McAvoy on defense was fantastic. I mean, he missed Game 1 with the suspension, but he stepped right back in Game 2 and just he's just a leader from the back end. He can move the puck. He can get it out of the zone. He skates really well. He can jump up on offense. He played fantastic. I thought Torrey Crew was also really big. He's been playing better and better as the playoffs go on. He actually played the most minutes against Carolina in Game 4. He took a lot of Chara's minutes, which I was impressed with. On offense, I think Bergeron and Marchand stepped up in Game 4. They've been quiet the first three games, but they really just stepped up. And that fourth line of the Bruins, which is missing Chris Wagner with injury now, but that group has just played so solid for the entire playoffs, and I think gives the Bruins a huge edge because most fourth lines in the NHL just can't match up with them, and the Bruins can toss that group out against anybody. So.
What's it like to watch a Bruins game and not be like, you know, edge of your seat, heart in your throat, you know, borderline indigestion, you know, spitting swear words like a pirate? What's that like?
It's kind of weird, actually. I'm not going to lie. I started watching it. I'm like getting all prepared. I had everything with me ready to go. And then I'm like, oh, well, oh, there they go. Oh, they scored another pop goal in the power play. Oh, I'm just going to go in the kitchen and cook up some dinner now, kind of thing. It was like kind of weird. It's kind of weird. I'm not going to lie.
So it's a great problem to have, but the Bruins aren't going to play for at least a week.
Yeah, yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how they handle this. So to be fair, San Jose or St. Louis, whoever enters the Stanley Cup final is going to be beat up. I watched game three last night, and at least three players were on benches at points, wincing in pain from blocking shots or taking hits. And Erik Karlsson didn't play like the last 10 minutes of the third period. And so whoever gets out of that series, no matter how long it takes, is going to be has taken some lumps in the process.
You're listening to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We're talking to Lauren Reed about who's the biggest Bruins fan I know. We're talking to her about the Bruins and the Stanley Cup playoffs here. And Lauren, thinking of those two teams you just mentioned, St. Louis or San Jose, who would you prefer to see and why? Once that's settled out west,
I don't know. My head says San Jose for some reason. I think because they're not as deep as the Bruins. They only essentially roll three forward lines. Burns and Karlsson and even Vlasic play like 30 minutes a night. So I could see that being a benefit to the Bruins once you get to that fourth round of the playoffs where you've got a lot of hockey in a short amount of time played, and I could see the Bruins being able to take advantage with some fresher legs and with a deeper roster. So there's a little bit of that. But then watching San Jose this playoff, they have a bit of that Team of Destiny feel right now with all these calls that they benefited from, essentially one in each clinching game of the series. So that also scares me a little bit in that no matter how well the Bruins play, they could have that kind of like nothing's going to take the cup away from them feel. And then and St. Louis and the Bruins play a pretty similar game. They both have staunch defenses, some good skill up front, play just a deep style of hockey. Bennington, their goalie, is really dialed in right now. So my head says San Jose, but for like that hockey god way, I don't know that I want San Jose. So I guess what I'm saying is San Jose, but I'm kind of on the fence about it as well.
And we'd gotten a text earlier, someone saying they didn't want, the Bruins fans probably didn't want to play San Jose because of Joe Thornton. They didn't want to go against Joe.
There's that too.
But I'm looking at Thornton's career. He left the Bruins 13 years ago.
Yeah, well, he was traded from the Bruins.
Well, he hasn't been a Bruin for 13 years. So
it's true. But I mean, I think the trade for him, I think he was planning on being a Bruin for life. He was their star. He was their main attraction, and then they kind of traded him a little bit out of the blue. And they've gone on this massive run, 3 cups in the last, I think, 10 years, 2 cup finals in the last 10 years, excuse me. And he's not. He's struggled out. Well, not struggled out in San Jose. They've had great years, but they just couldn't have been able to get to the big one. So I think there's still a little bit of that kind of tension. I don't think either of them care too much, but the fans certainly do. And so and any edge you can get in the Stanley Cup final, they're going to try and take advantage of. So.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for calling in, Lauren. We're sports writers here, so we can't root for anybody. But a good story is you having a good time, so we can root for that.
Yeah, well, and hope I won't be talking to you anytime soon. But hopefully, this series starts in like a week.
True.
As little time off as possible would be great for the Bruins, I think.
Yeah, keep the fire stoked, keep the fire going, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome, cool. Well, thanks for calling in, Lauren.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Alex, I didn't leave time for you guys to bash the Giants here.
That was Bruins talk.
We don't want to take that segment away from the Bruins. So yeah, that's
and I don't want to bore I know we have Giants fans out there. I didn't want to get too into the weeds with the Giants.
Right. No.
We can.
We've paddled through those waters extensively on this program in the last month or two. So we can leave that boat on shore. Yeah, the Bruins though, man. I go to Scotland, I come back, and all of a sudden the Bruins are in the Cup final, and that's got to have people Bees fans jacked up. What are the results of the poll question there, Aaron? You got that handy?
I am about to have it.
The Green City Garage poll question: Who would Bruins fans rather face in the Cup final?
50-50.
Whoa.
Yeah. Split.
Okay. Well then, coming up next, we've got Out in Left Field.
You sure do.
From coming all the way from Austria, not Australia.
Not Australia.
Okay.
Austria.
Yeah. That'll be back after the break on 101.3 The Game.
Get ready, because you're about to hear some weird shit. This is Out in Left Field on 101.3 The Game.
All right. It's time for Out in Left Field. Aaron, what do you got?
Austrian officers warn against cow kissing challenge for charity. An Austrian government official is having a cow over a bizarre Swiss app challenge, urging followers to kiss bovines to raise money for charity. The Kuckus Challenge, launched earlier this week on the Castle app, urges users in Switzerland, Austria, and other German-speaking countries to kiss cows with or without tongue to raise charity funds, reported Agence France-Presse. Elizabeth Kerstinger.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, Coach Jeff on that.
Woo! Austria's Minister for Sustainability and Tourism called the challenge dangerous mischief. She warned that pastors are not petting zoos and that trying to kiss cows could have serious consequences. Kerstinger says that cows could become aggressive, particularly when defending their calves. Negligent handling of Austrian pastors has led to serious accidents in the past, says Kerstinger, according to a translation of a tweet. I don't understand a challenge of this kind. It wasn't immediately clear exactly how the stunt or the castle app raises money for charity. That happens a lot with these charity challenges. It's like, pour a bucket of water on yourself, and then, I guess, maybe donate money after?
Yeah.
Like, not really that connected, but...
not a lot of follow-through necessarily implied.
Yeah. Every challenge winner donates half of his or her take to a charitable project of their choice. Users win stars, which can be exchanged for rewards, posts, photos, and challenge appearances, according to the app. Support the best NGOs and projects with millions of stars from your clan and make sure that the things that are important to you in the future are actually true, it adds. Castle users always know where the next party is going.
Okay.
So they're warning against kissing cows because apparently a female tourist was trampled to death while hiking with her dog in Austria in 2014. And the guy who owned the cow was forced to pay $500,000.
Okay. That's,
yeah.
So I'm listening to you read this and I'm trying to, like, the translation of the tweet, I'm trying to retranslate the tweet into German, because I know a little German, but, yeah, I've never kissed a cow. Have you guys?
No.
Are you going to, I mean, Alex, you hesitate.
No, I have not.
Oh, sure. No. Okay. okay. Would you?
If I won like a Thunder Road, don't they do that like for the milk bowl?
Yeah, they do, don't they?
I think they do.
Yeah.
They definitely drink milk at the milk bowl.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, that's,
So yeah, if I won, then I would, yeah.
not a chance.
I
would never.
No. I mean, maybe if other people were doing it, maybe if it was like an event, maybe. But, like, to take that on my own, like, take the initiative? No. Come on. That's the crazy Austrians.
Oh, man.
Oh, it's the Germans.
Ugh. Cows are, they're kind of gross, man. Like, they're gross. They're, like, slobbery mouth, flies all over them.
Yep.
Not a chance. And then they can get aggressive. I mean, I know bulls especially. Like, my uncle was almost killed by a bull when he was a teenager.
No joke.
He tried to mess with it, and he got in its pen, and the thing stuck its horns on either side of his face in the wall, and while it was stuck in the wall, he got out.
That's, doesn't that go back to the old saying, you mess with the bull, you get the horns? I mean, it does what it says on the box right there.
Don't mess with animals that are like 7 times your size.
Yeah.
Just like, don't do that.
Okay. So, yeah, that's out in left field. Don't go kissing cows. Don't go chasing waterfalls. stick to the rivers and the lakes that you're used to. When we come back, we'll be talking to UVM men's basketball coach John Becker on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
Another day of sports talk in the Champlain Valley. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
All right, we're back on Sports Saturday, Hour 2, brought to you by one of our new sponsors, Vermont Engine Services, Inc. They've been in business since 1985, located at 16 Krupp Drive in Williston. You can dial them up at 802-863-2326 or find them online at www.vermontengine.com or on Facebook. They're open 7:30 to 5, Monday through Friday, and Saturdays 8 to noon. They can, they're an engine machine shop specializing in engine rebuilding, boring and honing cylinders, crankshaft grinding, head rebuilding, engine balancing, brake turning drums, flywheel resurfacing, and they sell Dixie Chopper and Grasshopper zero-turn mowers. Incredible deals over there on Dixie Choppers. Alex, how's your lawn doing?
I haven't cut it yet.
At all?
No.
Wow.
Maybe another week.
Okay. I don't have a lawn, so I don't got to worry about those things.
No, that's a whole process.
Yeah.
And I'm frustrated with the lawn right now.
Oh, so it's not behaving?
No, I'm going to have to do some, you know, resodding and...
Oh, and tough winter?
Tough couple winters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've let it go a little bit here and there.
Poor guy.
Yeah, it's tough. But that's the plight of a homeowner. As you like to say, out in the hinterlands of Chaffee County.
Yeah, it is. You're pretty far from the lake.
It is. It takes 25 minutes to get here. Or not here, but here downtown Burlington.
Yeah. For folks that might not recognize the voice, that's my boy Alex Abrami, co-hosting with me. I'm Austin Danforth. You've heard me here plenty of times before. Jeff Paul, your usual pilot, is out on vacation, much well-earned vacation. I believe he's down in Florida driving around in a Mustang in the sunshine. And we're stuck up here. But anyway, I feel like I'm really awake right now. We talked a little bit in the first hour. I got back Wednesday night from a 10-day trip to Scotland. Been pretty jet lagged, in and out of zombie status the last couple of days, but I fell asleep early last night, got a big night's sleep, and I am raring to go. Do I look it, Alex?
Yeah. The moment I walked in, I was like, "Oh, that's a chippier Austin Danforth."
Oh, love that. Okay, good. Good. Cuz we got to be here, we got to be present, we got to be fired up for the listeners. So, first hour, what do we talk about? We talked about Scotland.
We did.
We talked about some PGA championship down at Bethpage Black on Long Island, where Brooks Koepka is destroying the course and the field. We talked some local sports. We got VCM coming up next weekend, high school regular season winding down. And then we talked to our old pal Lauren Reed about the Boston Bruins, who just ran roughshod over the Hurricanes, 4-game sweep, and they're awaiting who they find in the Stanley Cup final, either the St. Louis Blues or the San Jose Sharks, not the St. Louis Rams, Aaron. It'd be weird if they suited up. They'd be big out there. They'd make Zdeno Chara look small. I know that much.
Just the offensive line, like on skates.
Yeah. Oh man, I wonder how they'd move. That would be that. I'd pay to watch that. That would be funny. I don't know if they make skates that big though for a lot of those guys' feet. Do they? Any idea? Anyway, second hour here. We get a chat with the UVM men's basketball coach coming up with John Becker in a couple minutes here. And then we got also coming up after that, Hot or Not. And we should have a chat later in the hour with UVM athletic director Jeff Shulman. They had an announcement at Gutterson Fieldhouse a little while ago. Sounds like groundbreaking is going to happen here for the new arena, the Tarrant Events Center. Coming up in just a matter of a few days, apparently. So, big news up there on the hill in Burlington. Alex, do you have your spot on the new press row picked out yet? Have they gone that far?
No, they haven't. But maybe Ted Ryan gets a spot before me.
You think so? I mean, I think they should name one of the boxes because they're gonna part of the thing with the arena. They're gonna move where the press boxes are above the benches to the opposite side of the ice. I believe is the latest drawings I'd seen. So I think when they have that new press box, I don't know who they would be better suited to name one after or name it after than the venerable one, Ted Ryan.
Yeah, he as many listeners know, he covers hockey for us. He's covered UVM hockey for over 40 years. He started his career at the Rutland Herald in the early 70s, I believe, or late 60s maybe. Maybe
I think
69.
It was the late 60s, yeah.
And went to the Free Press and had a great career, sports editor, writer for 36 years, maybe 33, something like that. He retired. He retired from the Free Press in 2008 and has stayed on as the hockey writer in a freelance capacity ever since then. So he's gone a decade plus as our hockey writer.
Yeah, and long story short, he's put in his time up there at UVM covering Vermont Catamount sports. On the line now, though, we have it's not hockey, it's basketball. UVM men's basketball coach John Becker is on the line. Coach, how's the offseason treating you?
Treating me very well, thanks. Good morning, guys.
Morning. What does offseason, you know, this time of the offseason look like for a Division I basketball coach?
For us, it's been, the kids, it's graduation today. The kids have been gone for a week now. So it was, just staying on top of our players to finish school academically, finish strong. And then we've had two scholarships to fill. So we've been busy with visits and recruiting to kind of fill out our roster for this year.
Is there a time of year that you're maybe not busy or at least less busy? Is that coming up?
Yeah, starting today and through the middle of June, it will be our downtime, so to speak. So we'll try to get away and recharge, and then our students come back. We have camp at the end of June, and then our players come back for summer school. So the next month will be quiet, and we'll have a chance to do some stuff for ourselves,
like work on the golf game.
Exactly.
And you alluded to filling a couple scholarship spots. Alex has written about the couple guys you'd picked up here in the last couple weeks, a couple transfers, right?
Yeah. We got a kid from Alabama, 6'11", 250-pound center. Will be a grad transfer, so he'll be eligible immediately and have 1 year to play. Daniel Giddens is his name, and he started at Ohio State and went to Alabama. So former top 60 recruit out of high school, went to Oak Hill, which is one of the best high schools in the country for basketball. So we're really excited about Daniel. And then we got another kid from Oklahoma State who played as a freshman there last year, a kid named Duncan Demuth from Florida. And we recruited Duncan out of high school for a while before he kind of blew up and became a high major player. So we're really excited about both those guys.
So UVM still runs on Duncan?
Exactly. We still have three Duncans in the program.
So like you mentioned that Duncan, you recruited him out of high school, but when on the outside for some of your fans, you get a player from Oklahoma State, you get a player from Alabama, two Power 5 conferences, how does UVM land those players on the transfer wire?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely kind of new terrain for us as far as being able to get some of these high major transfers, and we had some other kids that we're involved in too. So I think certainly the success we've had, the NCAA appearances the last couple of years, and I think, these kids are looking at Vermont as a place where they can have a bigger impact. But still be part of, still be able to have an opportunity potentially to play in the NCAA tournament and be part of a winning culture and things like that. I think are, things that have, enabled us to get involved with these kids. And it's been really interesting just in the basketball community, AAU coaches, high school coaches, the exposure that the NCAA tournament gives you to allowing people to see your program and see how you play and see the quality players you have in your program and the way your kids handle themselves and, those type of things that more and more kids are being exposed to and seem to be interested in. So I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah. For your needs, how critical was it to land these two front court players?
Yeah, I mean, especially Daniel, we saw in the Florida State game and in the last couple of years, we've played very competitively against the best teams in the country. But the one thing that differentiates us from them is just size and athleticism in the front court. And with Daniel, we're certainly getting a guy that's going to be every bit as big and athletic and as good as any front court players in the country. You know, now with Anthony and Daniel up front and Ryan Davis and the guys we have in our program. So hopefully that will help us, give us a better chance to beat some of those teams and continue to propel us forward. You know, and we're very interested in moving this program forward. And I think getting these two Power Five forwards in our program hopefully gives us a better chance of doing it.
What are some of the tricky parts about incorporating guys that have been in other programs?
Yeah, I mean, we've done one other grad transfer, Trey Blue, came to us from Illinois State via Fordham, and so it can be tricky, you know, because you got to do your due diligence the best you can on the front end. And Daniel is a really smart kid that really cares about winning and really was enamored with our guys and with our culture when he came here on our visit and on his visit. And so I'm optimistic that he's going to, you know, he'll be here this summer. So I think that will be really important to kind of get him, entrenched in with the team and with his teammates and stuff like that. So I'm optimistic that it's going to be really, really good for us and really, really good for Daniel. But yeah, it can be tricky with the grad transfers because they are only here playing for 1 year and kids that bounce around, you know, to three schools, you know, you got to make sure you feel really good about the chances of it being successful. And I'm really optimistic that Daniel's going to have a great year for us.
And so usually May 18th is a reasonably sleepy day in UVM athletics, but a little bit of news up there this morning with the impending groundbreaking for the arena. Are you more excited to see that start, or are you more angsty maybe that you might lose your parking spot?
Well, the good thing is I'm going to have to downgrade, so to speak, my parking pass. So it saved me a little bit of money each month, so that will be good. But yeah, I'm actually here at the ceremonial groundbreaking here up in front of Gutterson. So it's really, really exciting. And you can just feel the energy for this project really coming to fruition. And there should be a shovel. Literally a shovel in the ground here in the next week or so. And so it's really exciting and it still seems a bit surreal, but just an incredible amount of work that went into getting this project approved and the money raised. And so kudos to a lot of people up here at UVM for making this thing happen. But it's really, really exciting.
It seems obvious in terms of a recruiting perspective that, oh, now you can even have even further reach. Is that really the case? You've already established yourselves as one of the best mid-major programs in the country. You're playing for NCAA tournaments every year, or to get into NCAA tournaments every year. Now that the arena is moving forward, you're going to put shovel in the ground in the next couple of days. How can that help recruiting? Are you going to be able to see those benefits almost immediately?
Yes. I think when it's finally built, I mean, that's when it will have the biggest impact, when a kid on a visit can walk into the arena or come here for a game and experience it. But no, it's a huge part in helping, like I talked, propelling this program forward and building this thing. I mean, it is challenging in our current facility, especially now, you know, we got some high major transfers on campus in the last month and to come from Oklahoma State or Alabama to our facility, you know, it's a huge, you know, there's a huge difference there. And we do a lot of kind of apologizing for our facilities, which obviously you don't want to be in that position, you know. And so I think it's going to have a huge impact. I think it's going to be an incredible facility, an incredible environment. And I think it's going to be a big, big deal for us when we can start playing in that gym and we can start really, sensing the energy and playing a season in there. I think it's going to be a big deal. And I think, hopefully we can continue to play at a high level like we've played the last couple of years. And I think the combination, hopefully, of continuing our success with this facility will attract, even a better student athlete than we've been able to attract here over the last decade or so.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time with us, John. And hopefully you can enjoy when that shovel goes in the ground later this week and get out on the golf course and then get that game dialed here in the next couple of weeks.
All right. Thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Later, John.
All right. See you, man.
That's UVM men's basketball coach John Becker on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Alex, I think that the grad transfer from Alabama was the one they had to have, right?
Absolutely. Because he can play right away.
Yeah. High caliber guy, and take a little bit of the pressure off Anthony Lamb for his senior year. That could make a world of difference for the Catamounts.
Here's another piece. The guy's going to play with some edge. He's got something to prove because he hasn't really had the career that I think he wanted.
As a top 60 guy.
Top 60 guy. He starts at Ohio State, but doesn't really put up great numbers. Goes to Alabama, doesn't put up pretty, even less numbers there. Then gets hurt at the end of his past season. And now he gets a chance to show that he can play. And I think that's going to be another pro for UVM.
Yeah. So when we come back, we'll have some hot or not. And after that, we'll be talking to UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman about the news from UVM this morning with the groundbreaking looming on the Tarrant Event Center. All that and more on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I wouldn't bother with those winter coats because Sports Saturday is about to bring the heat. It's time for Hot or Not on 101.3 The Game.
Okay, we're back on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Austin Danforth and Alex Abrami with you. Your regular pilot, Jeff Paul, has flown the coop to sunnier, warmer climes. He's driving around in a Mustang in Florida. but now it's time for Hot or Not. Aaron, what do we got?
Hot or Not is thanks to Superb Cupcakes in Williston. Stop by Superb Cupcakes in the Taft Corner Shopping Center in Williston for the best cupcakes around. They will not disappoint, offering over 100 flavors of regular and mini cupcakes made from scratch daily. No box mix here. Make your day superb.
Alex, have you been to Superb Cupcakes?
No.
Oh, it's closer to the hinterland, so I didn't know if you'd have been. I have not. It's more your dojo. I've tasted them in here. God, they're good. You probably don't want to introduce those into the household because it could become a problem.
I won't, just a guess.
Maybe you could do it like if some family function when your parents are back in town, something like that.
Okay.
But just a thought.
Yeah, I can't even imagine how good they are fresh because the one time I have managed to have them, I try to avoid sugar, so I haven't been able to eat sweets a lot. But the one time I have had them, they were like 4 days old and they were still some of the best cupcakes I ever had.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
Damn.
Man, fresh, they've got to be so good.
Yeah. I just don't go near them. I don't mess around with Williston too much, so I got that going for me. But
yeah, that's a bad take. But right, right there, before we get into hot, what's not, that's a bad take on your part.
It's nothing,
as someone who grew up in Williston.
It's nothing against the people of Williston. It's just like the traffic flow and all of it. I've told Alex before, anytime I go to Williston is generally the worst day of the week for me.
It's not that bad.
It's just so...
I've had other people say the same thing.
It shouldn't be that difficult. It's just... something about Williston and I don't jive.
I hate driving around the town at 5 on weekdays, but other than that, I find it's not a problem.
It doesn't even have to be that time of day. It's like, let's move on. Let's go hot or not. It's dragging me down a little bit. Let's go hot or not. What do you got?
The Jets will trade Le'Veon before the season starts.
Is this one of those stories I missed? Like,
yes,
when I was
is.
Gone.
Yes.
What happened? So fill me in before I can.
I don't remember who, but someone was reporting that they thought Le'Veon would be traded before the season.
Did he do something? Was there some shenanigans involved?
I think it's just because of how much money they're giving him. Like they're gonna like that. No, they gave him the contract he wanted.
The new coach reportedly didn't want. So Adam Gase, the new coach of the Jets, didn't want Le'Veon Bell in the offseason.
Okay.
And the GM signed him anyway. And now the GM got fired.
Oh.
And Gase is the interim GM. So I think the thinking would be Gase will get rid of Bell.
Is it Gase?
It's Gase. Sorry. It's Gase.
No problem.
I was going to let you just keep digging. I don't know how you can cut the guy if you got him. I don't know how you could dislike his skill set that much. It's a lot of money, but I
think it's more you can get a ton back for him.
I guess.
In theory.
I guess if you can get something back or make up for it, sure, I guess I'd be hot on it. But like on the surface, no. You signed him, you're working him into the team. What? No. I'm not hot on that.
Him and the linebacker that they signed this offseason, was it Darren Lee? It was someone like that. They combined are taking up almost $90 million. Just the two of them.
That's a pile of money.
I think that's a hot take.
You're hot on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think so.
Okay.
I also hate the Jets. So any more dysfunction would be great.
Well, you should be rooting for them to sign more big, albatross contracts. Yeah. The Bucks are unstoppable. So like they'll win the finals.
Oh boy. I got to see that first. I'm going to say not yet. Not unstoppable yet. Right now though in the East they look really nice.
They
real nice.
Bullied the Raptors yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. I can't jump on that one. It's the Warriors all the way.
Okay.
I'm going to be so happy if Milwaukee wins this year. They're a fun team.
They are. I've said before, I really like Giannis. I like his story. I think that's a feel good thing right there. But right now, no, not yet.
I totally get that though, because like the Warriors losing a finals is kind of like waiting to see Bigfoot. Like you have to kind of see it before you can believe it.
Okay.
Even though it's happened once.
Yeah. Okay.
Josh Norman is right about David Gettleman. So I'll preface this. What he said specifically was that, he didn't just say David Gettleman was a bad GM. He said that the Redskins, the division rivals of the Giants, should be putting David Gettleman on salary because he's basically doing their winning for them.
So he's saying this because Landon Collins signed with the Redskins in the offseason.
Yeah.
And I think even a past Giant, one of the cornerbacks is his name, okay. DRC. Sign with the Redskins in the offseason.
Also,
and then the Giants did not draft the quarterback to the Redskins.
Haskins, yep.
Yeah.
Also, you could say as bad as the Giants have been, they're giving wins to the Redskins. So there's that. So I'll take that. I'll take hot. I don't. Jeff Paul, if he's listening in Florida, is going to be so heated. But whatever. jump in the water. Josh Norman is right. I'm hot on that.
I'm going to say he's not right because the Redskins have been just as bad as the Giants over the last.
But
five,
they, no,
years.
They've been better.
Not really.
It is really splitting hairs.
Yeah, it is. Well, so I'm going to say no. And Josh Norman's over the hill at this point.
Okay, whatever. Good.
That is also fair criticism.
I wouldn't mind being over the hill with his bank account, but that's just me.
Every argument can end right there then.
Yeah, these athletes.
My problem with David Gettleman isn't that he's a bad GM. It's that he thinks he's like a Bill Belichick style visionary or like a Greg Popovich. Like the way he talks is like he thinks he's that, and he's not. He could win three straight Super Bowls the next 3 years and still not be that.
True.
That's a take.
Oh, it's absolutely true.
Yeah, that's true.
Bill Belichick's walking around with more rings than he has fingers on one hand.
Yeah.
And the guy, Dave Gettleman's won zero rings and also is largely blamed, although it might not be his fault, for dismantling Carolina.
Right.
So.
Okay.
I think he's a decent GM. Just don't, you're not Greg Popovich. You're not Bill Belichick. You're not Paul Brown.
Yeah.
Dave Gettleman.
Right. Yeah. He's and you're Dave Gettleman, over his skis. Okay.
Anyway, the Bruins are a shoe-in to win the Stanley Cup.
No. Just because shoe-in is really strong right there. Like, shoe-in means it doesn't matter who they play or how they play, they'd win. I'm not hot on that. But that said, I think they'll win. Lauren's take earlier that, you know, as beat up as those two teams from the West are getting, this week might be huge. You know, just a little recuperation going into the biggest 2 weeks of the year for the Bruins. So yeah, I think they'll win, but shoo-in, no.
I can't say shoo-in either, just because it's hockey.
It is hockey.
Anything can really happen.
Tuukka Rask could like suddenly not see the puck, not stop the puck, and all of a sudden, what just happened? We're down 2-0, 3-0. Who knows? Yeah, it's
yeah, not shoo-in, but certainly they're going to be favored.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Whether it's he gives the Eli Manning treatment, or it's they trade the pick, or it's they simply like someone better than him, Zion Williamson will never play in a Pelicans uniform.
Yeah. I'll take hot on that. Like, if he doesn't want to play, they'd waste a pick on him. If he would refuse to play, or if they can't figure out a way to trade that pick away, he could just go back to school, which would be wild. Think about like that.
He's not going back to school.
Well, he could. We haven't gotten to that deadline yet. Like, if there's about, 10 or 20 days? What is it? Yeah. June 10th?
The 29th, I think.
29th? Okay. So 10 days. They got 11 days to figure it out. I would love it if he went back to school. That would be just nuts.
The
hot take ecosphere would just explode. It would be I love that.
It could be really good for him too to develop more well-rounded basketball skill at that size with that athleticism and sure. Come into the league as like a fully formed LeBron style player.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
But his dad, and you can choose not to trust, you know, parents' reports on their kids as athletes and all that. But his dad did say that that's absolute crap, that he's not going back.
Okay. Well, okay.
But they also lie about that stuff.
Yeah, and then you got to maintain as much leverage as possible. So
yeah.
So I saw the lottery, but I missed stuff after that. Are there reports that he doesn't want to play for the Pelicans?
I don't know where that comes from. I didn't hear anything about him saying that. I think just people assume no one wants to play for the Pelicans.
Well, maybe Anthony Davis will stay if Zion is the first pick.
That would be crazy.
See? Yeah, it would. Who knows? Maybe they have beef. I'm not in the room. I'm in this room. And that's hot or not.
That is hot or not.
Okay.
Thanks to Superb Cupcakes in Williston.
Okay, Alex. Where do you want to go from here? This next few minutes are your minutes.
They're my minutes?
They're my minutes. Oh, man. They're your minutes. Yeah. Not my minutes, your minutes. Where do you want to go?
They're shared minutes.
There are minutes.
I mean, we just talked some Giants, and we talked earlier about how you might want to talk some Giants. What did you have that you were thinking?
Is there anything you need to get off your chest that you know that's been cooped up inside?
Well, I'm
if people could see the look on your face with that, that was such a pregnant. Well, okay.
It's months now, but I'm all aboard with the Odell trade.
Okay.
Let's get rid of that distraction.
Okay.
It's not even him. I love him as a player, but it's all the other stuff that goes with it.
And it's not even just the distractions, I think. Like, he's also injury prone and expecting a lot of money. So there's a good chance you're paying a lot of money for a guy to sit on the bench with a hurt ankle.
Yeah, I mean, look at the last 2 years. He missed basically all of 2017 with that broken ankle. And then this past year, they sat him out for the last month. Now, whether or not he could have come back if the Giants were in contention, maybe. But he had this weird hip thing or something. I don't know exactly what happened, but some leg injury. And then, so he didn't play the last 4 or 5 games of the season.
Right.
So now you're looking at 2 years in a row where
he's played like 8 games.
Can't finish.
Yeah.
So, and then you have all the other stuff that goes with it. And then, as many of my Patriot fan friends like to point out, you don't need an elite diva receiver to win.
Correct.
In this league.
This is true.
And I hear this all the time, which is true, but then it's like, well, the Patriots have won 7 or whatever it is. Is it 6?
6. Feels like 7. Feels should like have been 7.
Not sure.
Could have been 8.
So it's 6, but they win the most of them anyway over the last 15 years. So that stat is kind of skewed.
Yeah, I think... What do you got, Aaron? You got something?
Well, I was going to say people complain about the fact that they don't have any star receivers or any big body, tough downfield receivers, but their scheme is West Coast. Pat Shurmur's a West Coast guy. They've got a lot of mid-sized, good athleticism receivers who are going to be able to go over the middle and make plays in exactly that offense. So I don't see a problem with that. My only issue is David Gettleman saying he wants to bring the team back to a run-first power offense. I really don't want to see that team due to Saquon Barkley what the Rams did to Todd Gurley last year, where they just wear him out. Because that would really suck to watch that guy get hurt because he's taking 40 carries a game.
Yeah, and then he barely played in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd much rather see them get a nice balanced West Coast look. They've got the team for it. I really think that could work well.
Yeah, you take away Odell, and Sterling Shepard's he's a good NFL receiver. He's not a number one, but he's a good NFL receiver. And Barkley, you could argue he's the best back in the league already.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Catching and running.
Yes.
But to Aaron's point, you don't want to overwork the guy.
Right.
You can't break a second-year running back.
Right.
I hate the stuff last year when they said generational spirit and generational, that's all crap to me. But the guy is.
He's special.
He's different than most running backs.
As the guy in this seat would say, Saquon Barkley is special. He's a special talent.
But you can't win with one player in the NFL.
Nope.
So as great as he is, he can be stopped.
Right.
Contained. And we saw that in half the games last year because the Giants were 5-11. And when he went off, the Giants would be in the game. If he didn't, they would lose.
Right. Because they didn't have much around him.
Exactly.
Is this where we talk about the boat curse with Odell?
No, we're not bringing that
no?
up.
No, okay.
That's overblown.
Okay.
With or without the boat, they were not going to win that game in Green Bay. They were going to. Odell was still going to drop 3 passes, 1 touchdown. It was still going to happen.
In the spirit of hot or not, you guys signed Golden Tate, correct?
Correct, yeah. Okay. 2 days after the Odell trade.
Right.
A lot of people hated that decision. My hot take is it's actually perfect because the dude's a great route runner. He's a veteran. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's doing. And again, fits the system really well, even though he is on the older side. It's actually a really good signing.
I like the signing.
You don't need him forever. You just need him now.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that everybody's looking around like there's the fire alarm going off in here. Might be a phone. We don't know. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. Coming up after this, we've got UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman to talk about the news up on the Hill with the pending groundbreaking for the new events center. Stay tuned.
Now back to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
As the guy in this seat would normally tell you, it's Sports Saturday. We're living the dream and taking you with us. It's Austin Danforth hosting here with my boy Alex Abrami. This isn't a mistake. You are hearing the Burlington Free Press sports writers on your radio dial this Saturday morning. And because we're here, Alex, we couldn't be somewhere else. That somewhere else being in front of Gutterson Fieldhouse, where the University of Vermont had an announcement to make this morning. And really no one better to talk about what happened up on the news up on the Hill than UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman, who's on the line now. Jeff, good morning. What did we miss?
Good morning, guys. Nice to be on with you. We missed you up here. We were we broke ground ceremonially today for our multi-purpose project that has been long awaited, and we're looking forward to the full construction beginning as early as this week. So obviously it's a momentous day for all of us here. We were fortunate with the commencement weekend and Board of Trustees and the Foundation Leadership Board in town that many of our most generous donors were in town. And so we got the final approval that we needed from the Board of Trustees yesterday, and we had a really, really special ceremony that just ended about a half hour ago.
And now, am I correct in the original, the last timeline I was familiar with, this is maybe a few weeks overdue. It sounded like you guys were aiming for spring, maybe earlier in the spring. Was there any reason in particular it didn't happen until now?
We had talked. So the board gave approval to the project last October. And we were working to hit a couple milestones in terms of permitting and preparation for construction. We were hoping to be in that position sort of late winter, early spring to put a shovel in the ground. But as you can imagine, there's a lot of moving parts to all of this. And all of our numbers and budgets and donations, everything kind of came together in a way that this is the timeline that we ended up with.
And so this being the time frame now, if you guys can get cracking up there in earnest here in the next few days, couple weeks here. What does that do for the timeline going forward in the anticipated opening date of the new Terran Event Center?
Yeah, so it's probably, you know, we're still working with our construction partners, PC Construction, to finalize that. But it's probably an 18 to 24 month construction timeline. And obviously, you know, whether it's 18 or 24 could influence things quite a bit. But I had hoped that at some point we would be in the Terrence Center playing basketball games during the 2021 season. That's not a guarantee at this point. So it's still a little bit TBD. And we want to be careful about that too. We don't want to put our team, you know, mid-season, if it's mid to late January, early February, it doesn't feel like a great time to make the transition. So at this point, certainly next year, all of next year in Patrick Gym for basketball. And then we're going to have to see about how much or if all of the 2021 season is going to be in Patrick as well.
With the shovel on the ground, so to speak, what is this like for you now that, you know, you officially kind of move forward and can start construction? This has been a long process. You've been there over a couple of iterations of this project, and now that to see it kind of come to fruition here, this must be very satisfying for you and your staff.
Yeah, it's very satisfying, obviously, and mostly just because I just feel like in my role, such a responsibility to our student athletes and the student body as a whole. As you know, this is much more than just a varsity athletic project. There were dramatic upgrades for recreation and wellness on campus. And to our fans, you know, we're so fortunate. I talk to my colleagues around America East and Hockey East all the time. One of the things they always say to me is just how envious they are of the support and the crowds and energy that we have around our games. And so to be able to provide our fans with a much more comfortable, enjoyable spectator experience is something that that I'm as excited about as anything. So, yeah, a lot of energy, a lot of excitement around our department, our coaches and staff, and hopefully the community and the fans as well.
You're listening to Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. We're talking to UVM Athletic Director Jeff Shulman. And Jeff, with the construction, when it starts, how are things going to change for folks navigating their way across campus?
So, there'll certainly be a level of disruption that our fans should anticipate. And we're working with our contractors to just make sure that that our fans can still obviously get up to the games and attend the games safely and in an enjoyable way. So there'll be lots of communication between the department and our ticket office and our fans in advance of our seasons to come. But I think the fans that I've talked to are certainly understanding and very willing to live with a level of disruption in order to ultimately see through this this project that's going to be such a game changer for us as a department and for the people who support us.
And the really important question, though, is Austin and I have our media seats already reserved,
yeah,
right?
You know, that's been a top priority right from the start, is the two of you and just making sure you guys are well cared for and supported. And you guys are great, and we appreciate all the support that we get from the local media. And I can assure you that your situations will be better in the new facilities than they are right now as well.
That's what we love to hear. And so with this really, you know, becoming a tangible thing now, what's the next project? What's the next thing you guys are looking at in the department that is going to have the maybe close to the level of focus that getting this project off the ground did?
Obviously there's still lots of work to be done on this, and you know, we're hitting certain milestones as we go here, but there's still lots of planning and organization, and we're still fundraising for this project. So this will continue until the doors are fully open on the work. But there's a lot of other priorities, and even on the facility front, I'm looking out right now while I'm talking to you, Moulton Winterfield, where we play field hockey, which is in need of a new surface. There's one final piece to the Virtue Field project, a support building with public restrooms and game day locker rooms and concessions for soccer and lacrosse. And then there's a lot that we're working on just to make sure that we're positioning in our teams and our coaches in the best possible way to be successful, and that they have the resources they need recruiting wise and travel and equipment and all the things that go into running our program. And so the support that we get through the Victory Club on an annual basis is a big part of that. So there's plenty to do in addition to wrapping up this project, but seeing this project through.
Well, Jeff, I want to take you to thank you for taking the time this morning. I know it's a busy morning, busy weekend. You guys got a lot on your plate, but congrats for seeing something through that, you know, people have been talking about for a long, long time. We know it's no small feat, and it's a pretty cool day, pretty cool time for you guys up there. So congrats and thanks.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate you having me on. I appreciate all your support. Look forward to seeing you around soon.
Yep. Talk to you soon, Jeff.
Take care.
Yeah, this is, I went to UVM from 04 to 08. And as the basketball team was getting good, that's when everybody was like, hey, when can we get the arena that befits a really good basketball team? And so that spawned one proposal that was, you know, the multipurpose thing. Where are we going to put it? It's going to be 8,000 seats. It's going to be great. That never happened, because where are you going to put an 8,000 seat arena in town? It's got to be on campus. Well, there's no room on campus. Where are we going to go with it? That you know, went fallow. They revised it. Oh, we can put it on campus. It's going to go here. But it's going to cost, you know, $90 million or whatever the number was at the time. Mm-hmm. And then what does that do for Gutterson? What does it do for Patrick? And then, you know, the economy tanks. That goes away. Then they finally came up with something that seems a little more creative, a little more workable, livable, sustainable. And you know, took a couple of years for that to finally get to this point. I think we started writing about this in, was it fall of 16?
Fall of 16 or early 17. Yeah.
Where they finally proposed this current iteration. And I think I've said it on the show before. I think they made the right move. I mean, Gutterson is Gutterson. You can spruce it up, but don't abandon it. That's what makes UVM hockey special. Like that's the legacy piece. That's our Fenway. You can spruce it up inside so it doesn't look as much like an old barn, but that the Quonset Hut look is special. It's iconic in college hockey. Everyone knows Gutterson Fieldhouse.
Yeah, that was the right move.
That was exactly the right move.
That was the right move, and then obviously, you needed an upgrade for basketball.
Basketball can't play in an oversized or undersized high school gym. I mean, I've been in high school gyms that are bigger than Patrick Gym. And, you know, granted, like what they would have lost had they gone the multipurpose route with a building that's built for hockey that accommodates basketball would have been the atmosphere that makes Patrick the place that gives UVM an edge. And by keeping that a manageable size that you can fill the seats and not have empty seats, because a room with empty seats, as any athlete or fan will tell you, is a stale room, and a stale room doesn't get buzz.
No, it still comes down to supply versus demand.
Exactly. And, you know, it wasn't until this past year that they really started selling out a lot of games again. It takes a lot of winning to get fans around here to really show up, and they've finally done that. And you don't want to, like, you don't want to make it harder to sell out those games. You want to... Keep it manageable. The new facility is going to be so much more comfortable. It'll probably encourage fans to come more on game day anyway. So it's a win-win. And now we can start to see some big yellow trucks and, you know, cranes and excavators and stuff up there on the hill and inching closer and closer to a new place to watch UVM hoops. But that's this segment on Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. When we come back, I guess it's time to put a bow on the show, right? Are we at that time?
It is time to put a bow on the show.
Well, okay. Then that's coming up the other side of this break. Until then, Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I hate to say it, but the show is almost over.
But before we go, we'll get the Brass Monkeys bumping and get you ready for your sports weekend. This is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game.
I know you like the Beasties, Alex.
They were my favorite band growing up.
I know.
How'd you know that?
Brass Monkey.
They were my dad's favorite band, too.
Oh, boy.
And
I'm
now
not
we're
that much
aging
older
Alex
than you,
Brody.
Though. I'm only 37.
No, it's not an old joke. That's just the truth.
They had staying power.
Right, because their first album was 86 or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Was it Licensed to Ill? Was that the first one?
No.
Or Paul's Boutique?
Maybe. No, Paul's Boutique is number two.
Okay.
I think it's Licensed to Ill.
Okay.
That's a classic album.
They're all good, man. They're all good. Aaron, what do we got on the poll question?
Oh, it was close, but the San Jose Sharks edged out the Blues for the team that Bruins fans would prefer to see in the Stanley Cup Finals.
What was the final tally?
53-47.
Okay, that's a good poll question. Good on you. take a bow. Yeah.
Thank you.
Bruins fans are on easy street this week watching those two duke it out. That's got to be fun. The Caps last year didn't sweep anybody. It was like, oh, okay. But we had to earn it. It was good. But
I think that's a better feeling to earn it that way.
I much prefer just laughers. Just give me laughers. Tension is cool, but like if you can just savor every minute because your team is so good, I love that.
That part is good too, but I think to see your team come through in the clutch or intense situations, I think makes it a little more special.
I don't know, man.
Anyway. I've experienced both as a New York fan with the Yankees.
Yep. So. Don't say the other team.
The Giants never win easy, so I don't need to.
Okay.
Yeah, they never went easy. Except 1986.
And you see the roadblock on the road? We're not going down that road any further.
The close ones are definitely the more memorable ones. That's for sure.
True. That's true. I will never forget that the Patriots Falcons Super Bowl. That was nuts.
And the Seahawks.
Okay. Let's put up another road.
There's two of us, one of you. yeah. Wow. So we've made it through the show. But the countdown clock is going. We got about a minute and 10 seconds left.
You didn't crash.
The plane, we're bringing it in for the landing. A little turbulence early, but mostly smooth. Aaron's flagging us towards the runway. Can see the jetways in sight. I hope Jeff is enjoying his vacation because this was an experience. But I also don't feel super jet lagged. Maybe this helped me snap out of it.
It wakes you up going through the show.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it always does. And it like, I think I'm with it. And so Alex, what was this experience like for you?
Refreshing? Yeah. Eye opening.
Yeah, I bet.
A little scared at first.
You didn't look scared. You did look a little scared. Then we got your sea legs under you and you were good.
We did the podcast for like a year. About a year. That's different though, because it's not live. Like if we messed up, we stopped.
Rewind,
yeah.
Delete, all that good stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway, this is Sports Saturday on 101.3 The Game. As our boy Jeff would say, we're living the dream and taking you with us. For Aaron Wells and Alex Abrami, I'm Austin Danforth. Have a great weekend.